This is Kathleen McCoy, and you're listening to Hometown Alaska. Today, it's a beautiful sunny day, and it's a great day to talk about gardening and landscape architecture, and that's exactly what we're going to do. Our two guests in the studio today are Elise Huggins. Hi, Elise.
Hi.
And Dwayne Adams. Hi, Dwayne.
Hi, Kathleen.
And we're going to get into how we met at a class that they teach every year. But before we go there, I just want you to know we want you to call in and give us your questions. You've got two experts here who can listen to you and give you advice. So if you'd like to call us, please do. The number is 550-8433 or statewide 1-888-353-5752. And we even take email if you're too shy to call. And you can email us at hometownalaska@kska.org. I need to tell you that this program is broadcast again tonight at 7. You can't call in then, so this is your one chance to call in. And I also want to direct you to our website because we're going to talk about a lot of things today, and we've put those links on kska.org. Everything from the Landscape Architecture's website, which has lots of good information on it, to the Alaska Botanical Garden, which has a lot of outreach for people for gardening and landscape. We've got permaculture, a link to permaculture. We've got, a great link to Alaska landscape plants that these two landscape architects and the Cooperative Extension put together. So think about kska.org and think about going there when you hear something that you want to check out. We've got those links for you. Today we're going to talk about a garden design class that Elise and Dwayne offer and have offered for, we talked about this,
12 years.
About a dozen years, yeah.
A dozen years. Early in April, when there's still mud and muck everywhere, and all these eager gardeners come in and they have big plans for their gardens, and Dwayne and Elise kind of guide them through that. So we're going to start out talking about the class, but we're going to go a little broader than that, too, to some public space that landscape architects influence a lot in our own town. Both Elise and Dwayne can talk about that. And after our break, we're going to talk a little bit more about the class because we have some students who've taken the class who will talk a little bit about what the issue is that brought them to the class and what they got out of it. And then in the meantime, we're just going to answer questions from listeners who want to ask about landscape architecture or gardening or whatever. So let's start. I told Elise and Dwayne that when we got going, I definitely wanted to tell them I liked the way the class started, which was, are you here for curb appeal? Or are you here because you're going to modify your yard over a period of time, maybe a 5-year plan or a 10-year plan? And I really liked that diversity. And so I'd like them to talk a little bit about that. I think, Dwayne, you were the kind of guy that hit the curb appeal hard.
Well, what the message is, don't plan for more than you intend to spend. So simply put, if what you're going to do is to sell your house in a couple years and what you're trying to do is to get the eye to come to the front door and to come to an inviting space and maybe not your garage because Anchorage is covered with what's fondly termed snout houses these days. And what you want to do maybe is if it's a 2-year investment, put the money where it does the most for that specific purpose. That is maybe a lot of color at the front, something that are simple, non-cash intensive exercises that really provide a quick return that is something that's appealing to someone who's driving by that you want to come into your house. And that's much different from someone who is trying to shape a space in which they want to entertain or spend a lot of time, similar to what Elise was mentioning during the class.
Yeah. So talk a little bit about your yard, which I think you said is on the 10-year plan, right?
Oh, yeah. Our yard is at least on the 10-year plan, if not on the longer plan. We have an old house in downtown Anchorage that we remodeled, South Addition. Actually, when we first bought there, we used to tell people we have the ugliest house in the neighborhood, and they'd say, oh, that one. They'd know.
They knew.
They knew. And we've been – so our house may or may not have curb appeal. I think it's totally dependent on –
well, it's right at the
curb. Who's standing at the curb?
It has curb appeal whether you like it or not.
Oh, I see. Not necessarily good curb appeal.
Well, it's got appeal. Curb.
First of all, I live in a periwinkle house. We've always gone by the, I live there. I want it to make me smile when I come up to the door. Everything from the house color to, we have some funky landscape lines, a combination of curves and geometric designs. Way too many plants because I kind of love plants and I try this and I try that.
You can't say no to a plant.
Can't say no, but this is the year we're going to be actual gardeners. Landscape architects aren't, just so we're very clear, we are not gardeners. Mm-hmm. And some of us don't even know that much about plants.
I'm a of that variety. Yeah. Absolutely.
So, but people keep assuming that you would know all that.
Well, we do know what our real skills are design. You know, we are strong designers. We design spaces. We design places. We make things function well for safety, for aesthetics.
I think there's also a very good understanding how people use outdoor spaces. And, you know, similar to an architect, when you have an architect design your house or a public facility or a business, an architect has a sense for how people are going to use the space. And so they create the room to, you know, the size, the proportions, the height of the ceiling to reflect how you're going to use that space. We do the same thing with outdoor space. So, you know, if we design a staircase, for example, it's going to be very different from the way that you would design an interior staircase because you have a little more luxurious space. And so, and outside, people are expecting a little more opportunity for accommodating the way people want to move as opposed to the having to economize relative to
within
the cost.
Within walls,
so,
yeah. Uh-huh.
And so it's not much different from architects who deal primarily with the envelope in the interior space. We simply do the architecture beyond the building envelope.
Right. And I know that often designers start with, what do you do in this space? You know, what do you want to do in this space? And sometimes people have even a hard time getting there, right? I mean, I have, although when I thought about it, when I was talking in, when I took your class, I realized that there were things I'd been thinking about for years about my space, but didn't really know how to tackle, which is why I came to your class. So, well, since you guys aren't experts on plants, is I have an email.
Well, wait. Some of us know a lot about plants. Some of us might be close to being experts. Some landscape architects, we've had some wonderful members who have lived in Alaska and have been excellent, excellent plantsmen.
I know in the class you handed out a two-sided sheet with, you know, ground cover, trees, all kinds of things. And I know, and at least in your, we looked at trees that are, some of them are new to Alaska, some of them are not new to Alaska, and some of their features. So if you're thinking about trees, this is, you know, you could learn about trees. But I'm going to go ahead and throw out one of our emails just to get it out of the way. It's kind of a gardening question. Mary has written to us and says, what is the best environmentally way to rid the yard of undesirable dandelions? Is there a way besides just digging and pulling?
12-year-old kids who want to earn some money. Really, it's hand pulling.
Is the best way.
It's the best way. A lot of people use vinegar. Just, you know, vinegar is a serious base and that.
But you have to be careful because vinegar is going to kill other plants.
It'll kill other plants, yeah.
Like grass around the dandelion.
Yep. But it'll fill in over a period of time. Yeah.
But if you have a tree or something or a valuable perennial or something like a peony, that
could be bad.
That could be
very
bad.
You would not want to kill that peony.
Especially acid-loving plants. You know, you throw a bunch of a base chemical on there and you got a chemical environment.
Yeah, yeah. So there is no really easy way. I know someone who paid their son
$0.10
or maybe a penny. I can't remember. But anyway, they had a pretty good looking yard after a while.
Yeah, you better check your bank account too.
Well, and the key is when you pay the kids, make sure you get the root system.
Okay. Otherwise, they don't get the nickel.
Flowers and tops don't count.
Well, I came to the class because one of my issues was my front yard is north facing and loaded with moss. And we have two beautiful birch trees that we want to keep. And so I thought, I'm going to stop putting any nasty chemicals on my lawn because I want my trees to be happy. And they are seemingly pretty happy, but the lawn looks pretty bad. So one of my ideas going into your class was, I wonder if I could get this little dogwood to grow like it does in the forest, you know. And we talked about that in the class. I mean, I think, Elise, you said that there is dogwood plants available in some nurseries now.
Yeah, Cornus canadensis. It's a great little plant. Didn't used to be available. You used to have to go dig it up in the forest, but now nurseries grow it in gallon containers or even 4-inch containers. We put about 50, 100 of them into our yard under the birch trees, and it's a great, it's low maintenance. You know, a lawn is an interesting thing because I think a lot of us use lawns as leftover space. We just don't know what else to do, so we put in lawn.
Yeah, I would say. Well, it was there when I got there.
Exactly.
And I thought it was supposed to be there.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
One thing about using something like the dogwood is you can't just stick it in the ground. It is growing in the woods for a specific reason, and that's that habitat is what's growing that plant. And mm-hmm. so to as close as possible you can replicate that environment, which is a certain layer of humus and that provides a similar moisture and organic content.
Kind of friendly home to it. Yeah.
For the most part, the only plants you can stick in the ground and expect a lot from are weeds.
Which do very well in my yard, let me tell you.
And which we've used a lot in Anchorage as ornamental plants. But the reality is, if you aren't careful, Siberian pea being one of these, false spirea being another
Mayday
one.
Mayday trees.
Mayday trees are an excellent example. They become invasive or certainly undesirable, if not invasive.
Yeah, so I have a friend who told me that he has all these little baby May trees that he'd like to give me, and I'm thinking, yeah, then in a couple of years I'll have a lot of baby
yes,
May trees
will.
That I'll be trying to give away.
So will the creeks. And
yeah. So that's not a native plant then, the May tree. It was introduced.
Mayday is not a...
Mayday.
No.
Mayday. Yeah.
No, I'm not sure how it got here, but it's...
Well, a lot of those came in the early 30s, I think.
Yeah.
With the early settlers.
Early settlers.
Kind of a colony period.
They're a tree that really grows fast and it's easy to grow, and so, you know, it used to be that it would be a great plant because it was so easy to grow and so tolerant of a variety of situations.
And it gets those pretty little white flowers.
Oh, beautiful little white flowers.
Oh, yeah. For a brief amount of time, yeah.
Yeah, it's kind of funny. I bicycle up to Chester Creek, and I used to know it was spring when you caught that aroma, but, we've done a good job of cleaning those out, but you don't have that aroma. But
yeah.
There are other plants that we can use.
Yeah. Well, the other idea I had about my lawn was that I would let it go to nature, sort of by introducing dogwood. And my husband loves to protect little pine trees or fir trees that start in our yard, so we have little stakes protecting them.
Probably a little spruce.
I think they're spruce. I'm sorry.
No, it's okay.
And thank you, though. And so we just have a hodgepodge out there. And one of the things that you talked about in the class is it's really hard to make it look like nature, right? Because for one thing, it's not the same environment as in the forest or whatever you're thinking about. So
yeah, it's a classic case is the desire to take these plants that grow in the forest and transplant them into parking lots or along sidewalks in very limited spaces. And for the most part, these are not trees that grew up in that habitat. An asphalt parking lot is not a common habitat in most Alaskan locations. So you have to provide ample room for a lot of these plants. And that's one of the things we do often that is commonly done is to put the right plant in the wrong place, mm-hmm. or the wrong plant in the right place. And they kind of gets back to similar to the dogwood, that you got to make sure you got enough room for this thing to grow, that it's not going to crowd the sidewalk. That's a classic one is the arborvitae, it's a conical sort of a plant that highly desirable, used for years as a landscape plant. And it's always, even in Anchorage, you'll see the little narrow 3-foot sidewalk coming up to a house that's just two great big blue
that's
or,
right.
yellowish
years
green
later,
globes.
These giant things
and they don't
centuries
prune
in
well.
Front of your yard. Okay. Yeah. I think I've read in the notes that we had in the class that they're great for privacy, I guess, if you want to put them on a line for
never
privacy.
Never see out of your window again.
Yeah.
So that's a lesson. You put them a little bit further from the house and you anticipate their size and what they're going to do. The other thing with arborvitae is they're only going to grow in certain parts of Anchorage. If you remember from the class, we talked about zones.
And microclimates. Yes.
They do not like the colder areas, and they really want to be protected from the wind.
Oh, so they're not a windbreak?
No.
Not in Anchorage, no. Okay. They're a zone 4. You might get away with it in 3, but most places not. Downtown, they grow pretty well, but they're not a hillside plant.
Well, I just want to let our listeners know that we have two experts here that can take their questions, and I'm going to encourage them to call 550-8433. Maybe you're thinking about something this weekend that you're going to put in the ground. Maybe you have a question about it. Or maybe you want to think about your yard differently than you've thought about it before. That's what I loved about the class, was imagining the yard differently. That was what was fun about it. And that's what I think I like about design, is sort of it tax your imagination. The other thing we want to do is also, you know, this class is for residential homeowners who are looking to work on their front yard or their backyard or whatever. But I noticed that landscape architecture, the people we were meeting were mostly doing projects out in the community. In fact, the architect that worked with me was saying it's fun to work with a homeowner because it's so tiny and there's no contracts involved. yourself. We're just describing things and talking about ideas versus when you take on a big contract with the city or whoever, you know. But that's where a lot of landscape architecture work is done, and both Elise and Duane have done some big things in Anchorage, and we wanted to broaden this a little bit to that. And I know that in a little while we're going to hear from a landscape architect who worked with Clark Middle School students, is working with them now, a couple of landscape architects, redoing a park in Mountain View. So we'll talk about that a little bit later, but let's hear from you, Elise, maybe about what I know about is the birch trees in front of the new museum. Tell us about that and why, how we got there.
Well, that was probably one of Anchorage's biggest landscape projects in many years. It's definitely, you know, doing landscapes for cultural facilities is definitely a really exciting thing. That one, some people know, was designed by a out-of-country, actually, architect and an out-of-state landscape architect. We were the local landscape contact on it, so we helped in plant selection and, you know, you had mentioned the birch trees and why were they grown in the valley. And
I wonder if most people knew that, that they were grown for 3 years in the valley. I just learned that, I think, talking to Laura Minsky.
Yeah. They were actually probably grown for 15 years or 15 to 20 years in the valley. It's the three-year part comes into when we knew we had a project and we had selected the trees, was going out to the valley. And we actually, for the most part, the valley trees that, that were used, you know, we went out and flagged them and stuff. They were areas that were going to be scraped for roads or subdivisions. So it was actually a good reuse of a tree that might have
not made it. And now there was controversy about having a big forest of birch trees in the middle of town. Can you tell us a little bit about what that was about?
Well, some people love the idea of having a big birch forest in town. Some people thought, well, geez, it's downtown Anchorage. You're zoned 3, zone 4. You know, why not bring in maples and trees that are real and trees that, you know, will be here in 100 years? Because typically a birch tree is not going to be here in 100 years in an urban situation like that anyhow. So, you know, so there was this differences of opinion as to what should be. I think the final result, I think, is excellent, but, you know.
I like it. I've seen it. Yeah. When I saw it, I remembered, oh, this was so controversial when it was first raised. People thought there'd be safety issues among the trees. And
well, and then we had some problems with birch trees suffering some insect damage in the city, suffering some water damage or lack of water. You know, and then there was a huge debate over moose, you know, and something we found over the past years is that use a large birch tree and it's pretty much resistant to moose. You know, mm-hmm. if we can go with 20, 22 footers, at the museum we have some smaller trees, that was just a budget decision. But with these larger trees, we're pretty much finding that they are a lot less likely to be visually damaged by moose. So mm-hmm. they might get some munching and stuff like that, but they won't, you know, the tops won't be torn down or broken.
Eaten down to the nub.
Yeah.
You know, I have a birch tree question because I've got these big birch trees in my yard, and that stuff that comes off of them and lands on my car, what is that? Sap, or is that from insects, or
well,
is that from
birch?
It's not birch. It's poop. It's aphid poop.
Yeah, aphids. They basically, as they eat all the budding leaf, they in essence eat more than they can contain, and it exudes from their body, you might say. So it has processed that those sugars and that water to the point that it's very, very sticky, very sweet. And in fact, other bugs will actually milk the aphids because for that sap.
Yeah. Does that mean that tree is sick?
No, it's really common. I mean, really common. Insects and trees have been surviving for years, hundreds, thousands of years. What it does mean is if you have it, it could weaken the tree if the tree is under stress from either being in an urban situation, from having a drought year. Mm-hmm. But generally, and this is great timing because this weekend, if you have birch trees and you have too many aphids, before the aphids get wings, the best thing is to take a strong spray from a water hose, knock those young aphids off before they're flying, because once they hit the ground, they're not going to, well, we don't think they are, they're not going to climb up the tree.
We hope
again.
Not. Okay, that's what I'll be doing this weekend.
So lazy teenagers.
Yeah, strong sprays of water.
So, Duane, we're going to move to your project, but before we do it, let's take a call because they're stacking up, and gosh, I appreciate that people have called in. So, Tina, you're on Hometown Alaska.
Yes, thanks for taking my call. I have a manicured lawn, and in the backyard, I have a small or a medium-sized pod of natural growth. And in that, I have birch trees and spruce, and then a lot of the scrubby kind of natural but unattractive-looking small bushes that just have never been manicured and look rather scrubby, including that native rose that has a very thorny stalk to it. And I'm wanting to go in and take a lot of that out, but leave the birch and the spruce and just make it have a better, more manicured look. So my question is, will that rose come back? I'm concerned that that rose will come back if I cut it off and even try to dig out the root. Would I need to cover that area with plastic and then redrop dirt? Or what do you recommend to have a more manicured look in that area?
The rose is going to come back. My rose has been coming back for 12 years now. But as it comes back each year, the more the more carefully that we clip and prune it, the less it comes back. And it actually, it's now functioning as a ground cover for us. So we actually mow it down every year. As you get rid of these understory plants, what you want to do is instead of pulling them out, what you want to do is clip them and clip them and clip them. And year after year, and you'll slowly win. Dwayne will probably have a little bit of input onto the lawn thing association with the tree mass.
Well, I guess what you want to be careful of is you don't start ripping up. You know, the more of the root you can get rid of, the more you're going to retard the growth. But if you start chasing those roots, you're going to start getting intertwined birch tree roots. So that's one thing you got to be a little careful of. And these plants, you know, the secularis, which is the one you're talking about, the Rosa secularis, it will try to get into everything, including the lawn. But as Lee says, you just keep knocking it down. If it's in the lawn, keep knocking it down with a mower, and it'll finally give up after a while because it's not getting any enough photosynthesis production of nutrients to sustain it, so it'll go somewhere else or it'll die out.
Do not use plastic.
Do not use plastic. Do not.
Plastic is going to hurt the other plants that you have there. It's almost like trying to breathe through a plastic bag. If you wouldn't do that, the plant's not going to be able to do that. So you definitely don't want to go the plastic route. What you could try initially is some shredded bark mulch over, you know, clean up the area, put some mulch over it. Buy a grass mix that is, and we have some great local nurseries that would be able to help you, but select a grass mix that's a little bit more shade tolerant and a little bit more tolerant of native soils. And you can start to get the grass to come in a little bit. But what you might do is rethink the design and what that edge will look like with different design options instead of trying to get the classic American lawn right up to the base of the tree.
Yeah, I think one thing to look at is on any natural landscape, you know, it may not be the most desirable landscape in the world, but it may be, you know, it's a low maintenance landscape. So it could be that if you can learn to accept it by taking some of those roses or something and doing a little just selective pruning to clean them up a little bit and make it acceptable, it frees you from having to fight that all the time and allows you to put your efforts into something that may do you more good. For example, providing some more cultured plantings in some place. And so instead of that being a detriment, it's simply a minor part of the landscape that the eye doesn't go to. So look at, instead of worrying about that, place all your efforts someplace where the eye goes to something that is more desirable or more attractive. And then that becomes a minor element of the landscape, and you don't have to maintain it. And you get a lot more bang for your buck out of that.
So, Tina, did that help? I guess it did. So, Chad, we have another caller. Chad Taylor's on, and we invited Chad to call in. He's a landscape architect who has worked, is working currently. Hi, Chad. How you doing?
Good. How are you?
Just great. We were talking about landscape architects in the community at large, and Elise was just talking about working in at the museum with the birch trees in front. We haven't yet gotten to Dwayne's project, but why don't you talk a little bit about the middle school project and the park in Mountain View that you and some students are working on?
Yes, I'm here with Kevin Denier, and we're both part of the ASLA Student Outreach Committee. And we've been working with a group of students at Clark Middle School for the past two semesters on the William B. Lyons Park in Mountain View. And we've been going into the class, going out to the site with them, and going through the whole design process as a way to kind of teach them a little bit about the community and all of the different things that are involved with creating public spaces.
And I just want to tell our readers, we put a link on the KSK.org site to a daily news story about your project and has some pictures of the kids and the teachers and, you know, sort of conceptualizing what they want to do out there. And I think we've also got some shots that Kevin sent in that we've added to the website of the kids on the site drawing, some of their early sketches, things like that. Now, when I heard you talk about it, what was interesting to me was the kids' reaction. You were sort of surprised at what they wanted to do with this space.
Yes, they were actually quite grounded in some of their ideas. You know, they really thought about all different age groups, activities for all, and it wasn't just some of the broader ideas, you know, that you would expect as far as, you know, extreme recreational activities. They were very well grounded and considerate as far as what would really create a vibrant public space for everyone in Mountain View.
I know I saw some comments at the bottom of the daily news story, which was, you know, how about some seesaws or how about some swing sets? But what I remember you saying was saying to these students, okay, who's going to use this park? And they were thinking about designing a space for their grandparents because their grandparents would walk through the park. You know, it wasn't just sort of seen as a playground. And that was sort of interesting. Depicts the community of students you're working with. They're very international. They have extended families. Maybe that plays into the way they envision this public space.
Yeah, and maybe I will pass this phone over to Kevin to speak a little bit about the Tradition Globe concept that the students came up with, and I think he can speak to kind of the multicultural points that the students tried to pick up on.
Okay, Kevin Donnier, you're a landscape architect working on this project. Welcome to Hometown Alaska.
Great, thanks for having me, and Chad. It's been a great project, and the thing that has really kind of surprised both Chad and I is we first talked to them about kind of this overall master plan for the park, and I think initially we thought, you know, gosh, these kids wouldn't be able to grasp this concept of these kind of more universal ideas. And then at the end of last semester, and we've kind of been following these kids through since I think it was October. So we've had a little bit of a semester last semester and then this semester from January till May. But the kids last semester came up with this idea of this globe concept. And initially, one of the students was talking about a globe in the middle of the park where the kids could climb in and they'd be in the middle of the world, and then they'd pick a slide or a way to get out, and the slide would take them down through the park, and it would intertwine with other slides, and it would have different languages along the way that said welcome or hello in different languages, because there's a lot of different cultures and different languages spoke just in Miss McIntyre's class alone. But I know in the school district, my wife is a teacher, and it's a very, very diverse school district, And so it was neat to see that the kids attached themselves to that and talked about this concept of like a global village, because we kind of portrayed the park as something a little bit more special than a little bit of green space and a park bench and a shelter and a playground. We wanted it to be more of this kind of village green or common space for the center of Mountain View.
And they really heard that, huh?
They did, and they grasped onto that. And it was great to see the kids kind of take some pride in the fact that, you know, this is their concept, this is their idea, and they're running with it.
Now, if people go by there, can they see works in progress?
Well, right now we're just in the kind of construction document phase. So we've come up with concepts. We've met with a lot of different community members, community councils, Parks and Rec Commission, and everybody's super supportive. And so right now it's just the existing park out there, but on July 16th, there's going to be a volunteer effort through Parks and Rec Commission to do some work in the park.
And don't you have maybe by the end of summer some kind of a deadline to be finished?
Yeah, the plan is to get a contractor on board and to do the construction this summer and hopefully end by the fall sometime.
Right. Well, thank you for calling and giving us that information. We've got calls lining up, so I want to just remind people they can see shots of the students and some of their early sketches on ksk.org. Oh, and Elise, you want to jump in?
Yeah. I just wanted to do a plug for ASLA. Chad mentioned that. That's the American Society of Landscape Architects. We have a local Alaska chapter, and that's what actually does the garden
the
design workshop that we do is a fundraiser for that. But just as an aside, we have landscape architects in this community that have donated hundreds and hundreds of hours trying to make Anchorage a better place, working with school kids like Chad and Kevin.
And
I think Dwayne's big project, Midtown Park, started as a volunteer project working with kids, and it's since evolved into this great public space.
Well, before we jump into that family park, I want to say thanks to Chad and welcome Heather to the show. Hello, Heather.
Hello.
Hi. Heather's the teacher, and I knew that she was going to call in and talk a little bit about the effect on the kids of getting to work on this, and then we'll move over to Dwayne's because I want to talk about that Cuddy family park. But Heather, hi. How are you? Welcome.
Hi, thank you.
Do you think the kids got the concepts of landscape architecture through this workshop they were part of?
Yeah, this activity was really special. It's something new. The class is brand new at our school, and it's part of what we call our academy. And we had decided to do one based on architectural design and landscaping. And one of the main emphasis of this class is to try and give the students authentic learning experiences. So instead of flipping through a book or looking at pictures or something, they actually get to see, what would it be like if I chose this career? How could I pursue this? Do I want to go to college and try this job? And so, this experience is really special because the kids not only got to see how everything works and work with professionals from the community, but they're also going to have a product from all that work. And that's really, really a gift that very rarely happens.
Well, that sounds really cool. I want to go over there and take a look at it, and I hope we see something like a globe that you can slide out of into different parts of the park. So thanks a lot, Heather. I appreciate your calling in.
Mm-hmm. You're welcome. Thank you.
Bye-bye. Welcome, Peter Briggs. Are you on the line with Hometown Alaska?
Good afternoon.
Peter, I want to talk to you about the class that you and I participated in. You were my mentor and I was the student. But what I want to do is finish up with one other caller before we take a break and then start back after the break with you. So I'm hoping you'll hang on and join us in the second half. This is Kathleen McCoy, and this is Hometown Alaska.
If you missed part of today's program, or if you'd like to listen again to Hometown Alaska on KSKA, the program repeats tonight at 7 on FM 91.1. Remember, tonight's rebroadcast is recorded and will not be taking phone calls. A copy of Hometown Alaska will be available this afternoon on our website at kska.org. This is KSKA Anchorage.
Welcome to Hometown Alaska. This is Kathleen McCoy, your host, and we're here in the studio with Elise Huggins and Dwayne Adams, two landscape architects who teach a class here every spring for 10, 12 years. And we have Peter Briggs on the phone, who is also a landscape architect. I took the class. Peter was the person who tried to unravel the mystery that was my home. And so I invited him to call in just because I thought I could explain what some of the things were that brought me to the class, because those might reflect what some of the issues are in Anchorage that other people have or are pondering what to do with their yard. And I thought I could describe a little bit about what I brought to the class and what you, Peter, what you did with it. So does that sound good to you?
Sounds like a plan.
Okay. So one of the things the class asks you to do is bring your as-built. And I didn't even know what an as-built was, and I couldn't find it. We bought our house in 1980, I don't know, 81 or something like that, and it was built in 67, and Lord knows, we didn't have an as-built. So I just took pictures of my house, my yard. One of the things they said is take pictures out your window. So what do you look at in your yard? Which was I thought was interesting, and I did do some of that. But I also took pictures of problems, like the drip line on the side of my house, or the fence that gives me no privacy, or, you know, the two birch trees in my front yard that I want to protect, but what can I do with that shady space? And I know another one of my problems was all I have is this giant driveway leading up to my front door, sort of, you know, onto the side, and you know, is there another way to approach my house besides up the driveway? And so Peter looked at my slideshow, my little PowerPoint slideshow of my house with my issues, and he rolled out this sheet of sketch paper that would have gone on for miles and miles, and we did several feet of it anyway. And, you know, what I really appreciated was getting some different ideas. I told you I went into the class thinking I'd turn my front lawn into a forest, and that's not what Peter drew on the paper. So we started with the idea of a sidewalk, right, Peter, next to the driveway?
Yeah, and just the one of the interesting things is when we meet with people in the class is they all bring different materials and they bring different ideas and desires, and it really becomes a conversation and a dialogue with people where for your case, what was great about it was we started to chip away at the larger context a piece at a time in these handleable chunks. So for your front yard area by the driveway, it was just starting to address bit by bit until we had these sketches that started to fill out the whole thing.
Right. And one of the things I really loved was we got beyond the lawn, beyond the sidewalk, to actually thinking about putting things in the yard like yard art, or in particular, I'm remembering, I don't know if you remember this, Peter, but we started talking about concrete and pouring round circles of concrete in the front yard, because I was talking about how my husband doesn't really like to mow the lawn very much. So we were thinking about reducing the lawn, but not, you know, not with bricking it in or anything. Like, we want those birch trees to be happy. So the other idea that you had that I thought was really fun was these large circular platforms that might be the base of some yard art, or we might sit out there on a nice evening. I had never thought of anything like that in my yard, so I really thought that was really fun.
And it ties into what Dwayne mentioned about, you know, lawn sometimes being, or Dwayne or Lee's mentioned, but lawn being leftover spaces. It's a, you know, what do you fill those voids in if you're not defaulting to lawn? And the idea of really working with people's personalities in the workshop, and you know, if you start to dial into somebody's aesthetic from the photos they bring, and it seemed that, you know, whether sitting area or yard art might be something that you would do.
Right, exactly. And let's just talk briefly about my backyard, because my one descriptive word for my backyard was a postage stamp. You know, it was green, it was south-facing, which is lovely, and so I did have a little kitchen garden back there, but mostly have storage area, and the word you used was your house is floating, you know, because I don't have any deck or anything like that. I just have steps down to my backyard, and I just thought that was pretty interesting, too, that, and it didn't have to be a big deck. That was the other thing. It could be something that introduces you to the backyard, but isn't some grand, expensive thing. So I don't know. Did you have any memory of that, and any other things to add?
Yeah, and I think it's another thing. Dwayne Lee's references the idea of places and spaces, and what we try to do is take these spaces that are open and, you know, not necessarily homey, and turn them into places, a place where people want to be and to really inhabit it. And I think for your place, it was adding the idea of outdoor rooms and a concept of expandability, that if it's just you and another person, it's a comfortable area. If you have eight people over for a dinner party, suddenly it makes sense and it feels full still, but it never seems like a 5,000 square foot deck that somebody might have, where if they're out there on their own, it's a desert of treks.
Right. So anyway, Peter, thank you for calling in. I really appreciate it. I just wanted people to hear what the kind of dialogue might have been between a student and the mentor, and I really appreciated it. And I've got my sketches, and I'll be working with those. I'm on the 5 or 10 year plan, like Elise was talking.
Really, she has almost 20 feet of sketches. That's amazing.
Nice job, Peter.
I brought it in and showed it to them, and we were talking about it. So thanks a lot, Peter. I really appreciate it.
And I'd just like to thank you as well from the American Society of Landscape Architects, because the Garden Design Workshop is a scholarship fundraiser for us.
That's right. We just awarded
a scholarship this year. So the people that participated this year and in future years have really helped us out in the next generation of landscape architects.
That's right. I remember I went to one of your meetings where it was at one of your annual meetings where people were sort of showing their designs, and they mentioned that a student had received that scholarship. So that's really cool. The class is $225, but that goes to this scholarship. So that's right, Pete. Thanks. Yeah.
And just a quick how the class works is people sign up. It's two evening classes, one week, the next week, and you have a little bit of homework, but no big deal. Pictures, as-builts, things like mm-hmm. that. And then Saturday, we assign each participant or each residential house to a landscape architect. We try to mix match, and that's 2 hours with a landscape architect to actually look at your specific house. Is one of the
It's really cool, and you walk away with this pocket full of ideas. And if you go to the KSK website, you'll see a schematic of just an illustration of one, and it's been colored in, and it's so lovely. It makes you sort of start to dream about your backyard. So anyway, I just wanted to say thanks to Pete, and I'm going to welcome Andrew, who has a maple tree question, and he has been waiting for quite a while to talk to us. So hello, Andrew. Oh, maybe not. All right. I don't know what happened to Andrew, but if he comes back, we'll try to bring them in. So Duane, let's go. We were trying to talk about public space and what landscape architects do to make a city livable. And I asked you when you came in, what projects had you worked on? And one of them was the Cuddy Family Park.
Yeah, I think probably almost all the significant work that many of us as landscape architects do evolves out of some volunteer effort, very much like Kevin Denier was speaking to. Cuddy Family Park started as a concerted group of individuals who saw the need for a piece of green in the middle of the city. And through that effort, Elise, together with Tomas Diak, another landscape architect, and working with Chris Beck, who's a planner here in town, and
Mike
Mintz, all worked together, working with students, again, much as Kevin was speaking. And through their work, devised kind of an overall plan that caught some traction and caught some ambition and moved forward. Well, over the years, it was tough to get funding. They got kind of nascent funding for some rudimentary work through work with, I believe it was BP. Some of the trails and the bridge that's there and the amphitheater were put in. And then that's kind of where it sat. It was having trouble meeting that larger vision. And the Cuddy family certainly should be commended for their work, both as advocates as well as facilitating the work and contributing significant amounts of cash to make the project work. And coincidentally, while the next phase was being funded, it was far short of being able to do what it needed to do. But at that time, we were having a lot of trouble over a number of years. You've been here since 81, I believe. So you mm-hmm. remember the flooding that often would occur on Minnesota and in parts of Spinard. And there was a need to provide a flood capacity, flood absorption capacity for Fish Creek, so that when it reached a flood condition, you had the ability to absorb that. And there's not a lot of places to do that. And so project management engineering at the city had funds to deal with this. They just didn't have a project place. And this was one of the only places that could happen. And so one of the questions was, could this project accommodate that? And we saw that as an immense asset. And if you go there today, that I think it's a real jewel within the community, particularly in Midtown, but even Anchorage-wide. It's probably the closest thing we have to a true community park.
Right. I think they have events there. They have ice.
Right.
Don't they have ice skating there?
I was going to say, it's spectacular. One, it's a year-round park.
Yeah.
You always see people there.
It's right. Which is one of the nice things. Since we have such a long winter, it's nice to have something outdoors in winter.
And it continues. It has a life of its own. The speed skating group has raised money for lighting, so that lighting is available for that now. There's also a concerted effort by moms of some developmentally challenged children to raise funds, headed by a young woman named Leah Bolts, who's raising money for an all-children's type playground that mm-hmm. will offer a full, highly inspirational and challenging for all abilities and ages playground that that I think will complement it there in the center, as well as the fact that this whole park, through the work of Elise and Chris Beck and Tomash and Mike, also the larger plan is that visually and physically it will have a connection to the library with a literary walk, so that this becomes more than just a park, but it is kind of the nut of Midtown, that it all connects together. It's this it's great group of
what do
public
you mean by,
facilities.
By a literary walk?
That there's a national effort. It's called Library in the Parks, and that national network has looked for the opportunity to create extend the walls of the library and into parkland, and so that as you are in the park and as you walk to the park through a walkway that would have, you know, be protected and safe, as opposed to walk across the parking lot that you have now,
right,
that
yeah.
there would be boulders, and on those boulders would be plaques with literary script of the great lines of literature that, you know, capture the imagination. And so that when you're in the park, you know, those epithets, those poems, those sayings are something that sparks the imagination and challenges the readers to say, well, who was that and what's that about? Because
mm-hmm. And they can go to the library and find out.
They can go to the library and find out.
Well, plus, you know, when you think of programs like the Alaska Botanical Garden has the storytelling program in the garden, very popular program.
Right.
Shouldn't that happen at the library at
sure.
the Midtown Park?
Right.
And it's got the venues. It has amphitheaters and places for public performance. So
yeah.
It's just a great natural fit.
When I think about the library and books and change, I'm thinking someone's going to ask, is the garden Wi-Fi? Is there going to be Wi-Fi in the garden? Because books and...
There may be.
Yeah, we may come to that, you know.
With Kindles, you
yeah.
know...
Exactly. Exactly.
It does extend.
Well, you know, these examples, both the museum and this library, point out that landscape architecture is way more than plants. It's really about the space and how you use the space and how the space makes you feel. So, that is really cool. And I have another student who's called in from our class. Deborah, welcome to Hometown Alaska.
Hello, thank you for having me.
Well, thanks for joining us. Because we began with the class, I thought it would be fun to hear from another student about what brought you to that class and what you got out of it, and if you had thoughts about how it could be improved.
Wow. What I have wanted to go to that class for quite a few years and was able to work out this year to attend, so I was especially glad about that. Motivated a lot by moving to a new piece of property, had lived at my old property for 10 or 12 years and, you know, was getting to know that. And it was a full sun property, went to a new property, it was completely treed and shaded, so I had a whole new ecosystem to work with.
Mm-hmm.
And also a property that had not had any landscape attention for quite a while. So I was motivated at a lot of levels, you know.
Yeah, ground zero, right, beginning. Where do I start? So what was your experience like in the class?
Well, my experience was very positive overall. There were two, you may have discussed this already, there were two pre-planning sessions, and then it accumulated with the architect and a mentor kind of giving advice. And it was helpful in organizing my thoughts and time frames, because as you know, and people may, you know, you get so excited and you get so many ideas going, and there's a plan that needs to kind of happen. You need to do some things first, even though they're not the aesthetically pleasing things or the fun things. There's some hardscape things that have to happen. And it really provided me with a lot of support in getting some of that groundwork done before we got into like the fun stuff of putting organic material out there.
Right. And did you have some thoughts about improving the class?
I'm sorry, say that again?
Did you have some thoughts about something you wish the class
yeah.
had done?
Definitely. Although I thought it was a great format, I thought it could get better. You know, they've been doing this for a while. And the first two planning sessions, there is 30, 35 people there, and they identified who they were and what brought them to the class. And there was a definite theme. You know, there were hillside folks who have a special ecological system up there. There are downtown people. There are people with specific building projects in mind, like retaining wall was a theme that kind of came up. I remember three or four people that had retaining wall issues. And I thought it might have gotten better if we could have grouped like-minded people or with like similar issues together and had one or two folks consulting with them and let some learning happen between participants, because as you know, people love to talk about their property.
Yeah.
And they love to tell you about what's going on there. So some learning can, natural learning can happen from the other participants kind of sharing their situation.
That's an interesting idea, Elise and Duane. What do you think about that?
Well, I think that that's a real good idea, actually. Finding the time and fitting it in is always a challenge. But, you know, I think Deb is exactly right. People do like to talk about their yards. I don't want to say they don't want to talk about their problems, but
yeah.
not that that doesn't happen, too.
Yeah.
But the ability to share, you know, this is what I'm thinking. Well, that's what I was thinking. You know, I saw this in Sunset Magazine. Oh, really? Well, you know, what was that? And, you know, that ability to share is not a form that's provided in the class, and the degree to which we can move it to a dialogue instead of a duologue.
Rolling the truth downhill
from Mount Olympus.
From Elise and Duane.
Exactly.
Yeah. So how about you, Elise?
Well, I don't know how many times, excuse me for interrupting, but I don't know how many times you're going to be able to offer the class and attract enough people. You know, it's a commitment of time for sure. Two and a half hour planning sessions, and then the third session with the architect. And so it might be able to be reduced. I mean, I would even be interested in doing it again and again if there was like one session, maybe 3 hours or more, and then hook up with the person at the end. That might be an option too.
Mm-hmm. Well, these guys have taught it for 12 years. I they can mull that over and think about it. Yeah.
Yeah, thanks so much for the suggestion.
That's great. And Deb, have you gone to work on your property yet or on your yard?
Absolutely, absolutely. The ideas that this person provided and the time frames. And for me, because I don't have unlimited resources, it was particularly helpful in taking the math plan, which has been tweaked, of course, and turning it into a five-year plan, breaking it out to do a certain number of things every year, which helps me personally because I don't feel overwhelmed by trying to accomplish everything. But it puts a reasonable fiscal note on it as opposed to, you know, something that seems undoable.
Right, and probably keeps your back from breaking one season. Yeah. Well, thanks so much for calling in. I really appreciate it.
Well, thank you, and thanks for having the class. I really appreciate it being available in this community.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks, Deb.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Just one last note to our listeners. If you have a call for Elise or Duane, we're almost to the end of our hour, so it's 550-8433 or 1-888-353-5752. And I don't want to move away too far from, you mentioned the Alaska Botanical Garden and the stories in the stories in the garden, but I know that they have an ambition to put up a facility in the garden that would be for workshops like this, and I just wanted to make sure people knew that that was an ambition in the community.
It certainly is. The Botanical Garden was very fortunate in being accepted into the 4-acre pre-development process, which is, we get assistance from Rasmussen on that process too, and it has been really great working with designers, architects, and even a landscape architect on what the vision for the garden could be. And that does include a visitor education center, new building on the site that would provide perhaps a forum for this class to occur, but definitely a place for gardeners and people interested in not only just interest in their yards and the environment, but how do you do things and how do you work with plants and how do plants fit into the overall picture.
Right. It's just so great that there's so many ways that if you're curious and you're moving this direction, there's ways to get fed. I mean, the Cooperative Extension is another one. We have their link on our website. There's a great starting place.
Wonderful resource, the Cooperative Extension.
Never want to forget that.
Yeah. Interestingly enough, it was actually Julie Riley at the Cooperative Extension Service who introduced me to a class that we used to teach at the university, which was a predecessor to this garden
workshop.
Oh,
no kidding.
Yeah. So
it has history before your 12
Cooperative
years.
Cooperative Extension Service. And she took it over from a guy named Bruce Sharkey, who was a landscape architect. So it goes back.
Wow.
Its roots go back 30 years, actually.
Wow. Well, we have about 5 minutes, and I have been neglecting our emails, and we have a couple of emails that have come in that we should try to deal with. So one of them is sort of funny. It comes from a science teacher. They didn't really sign their name, but they just wanted us to know that vinegar is an acid, not a base.
Oh,
I guess, did we
I'm
call
sorry.
It a base?
I called it a base. I called it a base. We stand, my apologies.
We stand corrected.
Yeah, appropriately stated.
And then here's one. It's an interesting one. I like this one because I like the idea of using your yard in the winter. I talked a little bit about fire pits and things. This is a person who's asking about, they're thinking of a small hockey rink in their yard. Is there anything we could do to save the grass so it is not destroyed by the rink every year?
You know, that's going to be a tough question, and that's going to depend annually on the type of winter we have, what snow coverage, the temperatures we have. There is a product out there that's called Winter Rink, I think, or something. Do you know anything about that, Duane?
No. The fundamental problem is that you have this sheet of ice, which is relatively impermeable, which simply does not allow it to exchange gases. Even though everything's frozen and there's snow on top, there's a lot of there are still minute levels of biologic activity that is exuding gases, and there's the need for oxygen into the roots. Roots are still using oxygen. And when we shut that off, that accumulation of gases creates an acidic environment. That acidic environment kills the plant. And that's the problem. I believe there are some products that provide basically what kind of like what they use on golf course greens, so that you get an air layer in there, but you got to have a way to get those gases out. Yeah, you know, just simply having that sheet doesn't do it. So you could look at something like that, which is a web material that lifts the ice off of direct contact with the ground, that may allow that escape of grasses to that escape of grasses. That
gases
from the grasses.
Gases from the grasses.
So I need that science teacher again.
Yes. The other part of that too is compaction. You know,
what that
type of material does is it reduces compaction, because when you have these winter ice rinks, spring is coming, you're kind of excited about spring, and we forget that we need to kind of clean up that ice rink and remove it and get it off the yard so we don't have compaction of the lawn area. And definitely you do not want to put an ice rink in your perennial beds or anything like that, but open lawn area. And maybe you do it every other year.
Yeah, so the grass has a chance to come back. Maybe. Yeah.
Maybe. Duane is shaking his head.
He's not too sure about that. Well, we have one more. We have about a minute and a half, so we don't have a lot. But this is a big open-ended question. It comes from Chris, and he says, I would love to hear about other projects that landscape architects work on other than residential, park and school, that tend to focus on plantings. So I think is he asking for projects that focus on plantings, or is he asking, do you do, you know, informational displays in parks? I'm not really sure.
Well, I think the Botanic Garden is probably the eminent example of something that's focused on planting. Certainly, gardens across the nation, almost every community, you know, Chicago Botanic Garden, Golden Gate has numbers of.
Yeah, and ABG is definitely the place to go if you're interested in plants and knowing about plants. They just are in the process of completing the East Garden, which is actually.
There we go, Elise.
Plants for art. So
thank you, Elise Huggins and Duane Adams, for joining us and talking about landscape architecture. Hometown Alaska is taking next month off, but be sure to tune in next Wednesday at 2 p.m. for the first in a 5-part series, Freakonomics, on KSKA. Pat Yak is the Vice President of Public Media. Kristen Spack engineered today's program. Thanks so much for listening. I'm Kathleen McCoy.
Hometown Alaska is a production of Alaska Public Telecommunications Incorporated, which is solely responsible for its content. Theme music for Hometown Alaska is Lead Dog, composed and performed by Kevin Barnett from Eagle River. Views expressed on Hometown Alaska are those of the participants and do not reflect KSKA or its underwriters. Today's program is available on our website at kska.org, and CD copies can be purchased by calling 550-8400. This is KSKA Anchorage.